We live in an era when informality reigns supreme and casual dining habits are standard. The rituals surrounding eating together have been pared back. Indeed, many say that they are not into rituals. Ritual is a boo word, and I suspect that's a reflection of the underlying puritanism of New Zealand culture and society in its origins. Yet customs about meals are powerful shapers of behaviour and culture. Food is a metaphor for the quality of our social interactions. No wonder it's often a source of controversy in communities. Fights about food are the background to those puzzling words on the lips of Jesus in Mark's Gospel this morning. Jews mark themselves out as distinctive people with elaborate eating codes. As the early church grows out of this matrix, it has to decide which of these rituals it will keep and which it will discard. Different communities did different things. Some churches kept all the Jewish laws combined with faith in Jesus. Some kept some Jewish laws, some almost none, especially the Gentile churches started by Paul. But even the decision to drop the Jewish food laws didn't stop fights over food. At Corinth, Sunday worship consisted of a bring-a-plate meal called the Love Feast, in the middle of which the Eucharist was celebrated at some point. But there was trouble with the rich people bringing food and customs that shamed poor people, with heavy drinkers becoming intoxicated, and with others taking the whole thing so lightly that the solemnity of the Eucharist was undermined. Out of these turbulent experiences has come a determination by the church to have good ground rules about ordering its worship, especially at this sacred meal which we celebrate every Sunday. The customs we observe, the ceremonial and the rituals we use matter because they shape the quality of our worship. And it's always worth asking, as Jesus did this morning, whether these house rules are essential or whether they are a complicating irrelevance. Anthony DeMello had a story about the guru and his cat. When the guru led his disciples in worship and meditation sessions, his cat would wander in and make itself at home in the middle of the proceedings. After the guru died, his disciples wouldn't start a worship and meditation session unless the cat was present. When the cat died, it was stuffed and given a place of honour in the meditation hall. As the liturgical movement has worked its way through the life of the mainline churches over the past 100 years, it has asked some hard questions about some of the customs and accretions that have crept into our worship. Always it seeks to simplify and to concentrate on the essentials. So as the service starts, we do not waste time on overdoing the greetings, the confession, and the song of praise, but get to the readings as soon as possible. What matters in this first part of the service is hearing the story of what makes us a people who love God. This is where their time and attention should go. And as we move into the second half of the service, as bread and wine are placed on the table, we keep it simple. We do not over-elaborate the simple action. What matters in the second half of the service is the great Thanksgiving prayer. So we do not allow the offertory to become a mini-rite in itself, which anticipates and duplicates in microcosm the great Thanksgiving prayer that we are about to move into. But my main concern this morning is to point to the death of ritual outside the church and the way in which it is impoverishing us all. We live in a society in which, as I said before, informality reigns supreme. You can see it in the casual dress codes that often obtain at weddings, and for that matter, funerals. But it's at the reception afterwards that things often start to wear thin. I remember one such occasion when the photographer turned to me and said, "They haven't done anything about the speeches, so you are going to have to be the MC and propose the toasts." I'm not arguing for a return to Victorian formality, but I am concerned that in 100 little ways we are losing the culture, the habits and the skills of hospitality, and the arts too of making an occasion out of the big events in our life. Maybe that's why the film Babette's Feast impressed us so much. She went to so much trouble and she knew what to do. Here again, I'm not urging us all to take a subscription to Cuisine magazine or to start throwing dinner parties right, left and centre. It's just that we are followers of someone who made feasts and dinners and meals the centerpiece of his ministry. The friend of sinners met them most often around food. He was prepared to break the rules about who righteous people should break bread with. So he has set us on a course of fights about food for as long as the world lasts. For good ritual has the power to move us from one place to another. A simple meal that brings a family together is a great thing. A well-thought-through wedding reception that honours the couple and their families is a significant achievement. And a well-organised sacred meal that puts us in touch with God is worth getting up for on Sunday morning. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.